Let me ask you a question. How is your physical health? Really? Because if you're like me, you probably struggle with it. You know that you need to eat right, exercise, get good sleep, drink plenty of water. But for a lot of us in America, those healthy habits, they stay on the back burner of our life. My guest this episode is Connie Nightingale. She is a personal trainer and nutritionist and bodybuilder. And she says that ultimately, we have to make sure that it is our nutrition that we handle and take care of first. That all of our dreams of weight loss and sculpted bodies and healthy lifestyles depends on a strong foundation of solid nutrition. So without further ado, let's get to it. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Better America podcast. I'm your host, Billy Hatridge, and with me today is Connie Nightingale. She is coming from us from Idaho, and Connie is a certified personal trainer, nutritionist, bodybuilder, kind of the whole shebang. And so we're going to be talking about how American families can be healthier and fitter and how that would impact society as a whole with a healthier country. Connie, I want to thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
And why don't you tell people kind of about your journey into the personal training realm, the physical fitness, and kind of what you're doing today with your platform?
Well, it's kind of a crazy one. So I could give you the sweet and condensed version, or I could give you the whole shebang. But I'll just kind of keep it sweet and condensed for today because I know we have a lot of things to dive into. But the long and the short of it, and you're totally going to laugh about this, is that when I was 8 years old, I lived in a pretty religious family. And so my mom did not let us watch anything, not even a lot of G-rated stuff. She thought Disney was out to get us. But anyways, I remember sneaking over to the neighbors when I was 8 years old and we watched The Terminator. And I swear that like spiked this secret obsession for bodybuilding because boy, oh boy, I thought Arnold was the best thing on the planet. And that kind of led me down this interest in bodybuilding rabbit hole. I had multiple friends later on in life that were into bodybuilding. And I remember going to one of my friend's house when I was like 16 and she was a little bit older. She was in her 20s. And I was like, what do you eat around here? And she's like, oh, I'm allergic to this. I'm allergic to that. And I'm like, well, what do you eat? And at the time, I didn't really understand the mechanics of it. And I was thinking she was crazy, but I realized now that she was watching her diet extremely closely because of the physique goals she was trying to attain. So when I say it led me down this fitness rabbit hole, though, I'm not talking I went out and was pumping iron all the time or anything like that. I didn't work out at all. I was just super interested in it. And anytime I got my hands on somebody that was super interested in fitness, I loved to just grill them about it. So later on in high school, I took multiple weight training classes. There was a coach and teacher there that was a really good mentor for me, and he started a powerlifting team. And so at the time, I was doing like three periods of weight training, and I did some competitive powerlifting at the high school level, so nothing crazy through high school. And then after high school, I was out of the gym. So it was kind of a weird transition, but you know how it is in adult life. Sometimes you get a little bit busy, and I spent that whole time thinking of how I could get back into the gym, but it just seemed like an overwhelming task as a young adult working multiple jobs and all these things. Now, that's not to say that I wasn't physically active. I've been active my whole life. I've been in rodeo, motocross, all of these things. So super busy person, super active. I just wasn't out pumping iron. So, right. Into my adult life, I have two children. I became a busy mom. And the thought of getting out and getting active was kind of exhausting as a parent. Also, how do I do that without taking time away from my kids was always this big question. And I remember like 6 or 8 years ago talking with my boss, because he's into CrossFit, being like, man, I just want to go to the gym in the morning, but I don't know how to do it because I can't go in the morning because I don't want to wake my kids up too early. And then I got to be to work at 7 o'clock in the morning and I just don't know how to make this work. So I kind of spent the next few years like constantly hashing this out in my head, but I never could quite come to a conclusion. And so there was kind of intermittent activity at that point. It was like, get out and run one morning at 4 a.m. here, maybe once a week for like a couple of weeks or something. And, right. and just not really, I would have these big aspirations, but it just wouldn't come into fruition because there was just too much crazy stuff going on in life. Well, finally, at one point, my son was having a bunch of problems with attention deficit disorder. And we'd basically tried everything and we were totally against putting him on medication. And finally the doctor was like, okay, listen, I mean, even his therapist was like, we're not going to counsel him anymore until he gets on some kind of medication because it's really not doing any good. And that was really disappointing to me as a parent. I kind of felt like a failure. And so at that time we put him on medication. Well, that kind of started a downward spiral with him. It made him worse and worse. He had all sorts of like mood disorders and things like that, that he developed from going on all of these medications, and things got pretty crazy at our house for a period of time. And so finally I felt like I was at my wit's end, and I happened to be looking through this health magazine, and there was a seminar done by a doctor about ADHD and autism. And I looked at my husband and I was like, okay, we're gonna go to this. So we went to this seminar and we sat in the front row with our mouths open, like, holy cow, this is our life. This is crazy. And the lady basically opened our mind to all sorts of different things on how kids that are on the spectrum function and all these things. And then a big thing she placed emphasis on was diet. Now, that's not to say I hadn't tried diet stuff before, right? Because you hear this all the time with kids with ADHD, remove red dye, remove gluten, do this, do that. We tried a bunch of that, didn't get anywhere with it. And it was just really discouraging. So after the seminar, she said, hey, well, we're doing another seminar on a diet that we like to put all of our kids that are in our focus program on. And so you should come check it out. My husband wasn't available that day, so I ended up going, and it pretty much blew my mind again. I came home and I was like, well, honey, we are going to change our diet completely. And my husband was like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, there was no, it's called the GAPS diet. It is extremely, extremely strict. And basically what they were saying is a lot of people's mood disorders and lots of other dysfunctions in the body come down to gut health. And the foods that we're eating in America today heavily impact our gut health in a negative manner. And so basically I cleaned out all of the cabinets the next day. And I went shopping for grain. This is such a strict diet. You'll have to look it up. I can't even put it into a good picture for you. But no grain, no potatoes, no rice, no sugar, it's super basic. I mean, and so the first couple meals, I'm not going to lie, I'm a pretty decent cook. But when you have no ingredients and you're used to cooking with all sorts of these things that are made for you, right? Like spices and pot roast mixes and things that you just throw in. It's really hard to figure out how to make things work. And there's a lot of things that you cannot have on this diet. So the first couple meals were pretty bad. I remember we were sitting at the table and my kids were like chewing and they were like, yuck. Oh, this is gross, you know? and I said, well, guys, this is going to be how it's going to be. So we're just going to have to deal with it. But fortunately, there's so much information out on the internet, other people that have done this diet and things like that. And so I started getting really big into looking for recipes that were compliant with it. And in a nutshell, the cooking got a lot easier. I learned if I prepped my food ahead of time, that I could be really efficient for the whole week. So that was really great. And within 2 weeks of going on the diet, my son was like a different human. It was crazy. And not only was he doing much better, and this is not just the placebo effect, I will tell you, because we had friends, neighbors, family, they're like, wow, what's going on? He's like totally changed. We would like to hang out with him now. Like, he, right. It was really crazy. So anyways, basically it fixed a lot of stuff with him, but within 2 weeks, my husband and I started to notice that we didn't have joint pain anymore. I didn't feel bloated and fatigued anymore. I always felt like I was like walking around in this fog. And so all of a sudden, big changes started to happen. And I wasn't by all means obese, but I've always fought with my weight quite a bit. And so I was about 180 pounds when we started the diet. And within 6 months, I had lost about 50 pounds.
Wow.
So not starving, we're eating wholesome food, vegetables, all of these things. And I wasn't counting calories or anything. And I just started to melt. So anyway, I had obviously had some major problems too. Later on down the road, I found out I have Hashimoto's autoimmune disease and PCOS, which is why I was heavily impacted by the fact I changed my diet, because diet is also a big factor in a lot of autoimmune disease and stuff like that. So anyway, that was the answer. I lost a bunch of weight. My husband and I were both feeling great. My son was doing much better. And so one day I was kind of looking in the mirror because I had lost all this weight, and I was like, wow, I have like no shape. And I was thinking, and I remember going, you know what? The only person that's gonna to get that beach body that every woman wants, the only way I'm gonna do it is if I do it. I'm not gonna have Billy do it. I'm not gonna have the lady down the street do it. Nobody's gonna wake me up in the morning and be like, get to work. I have to make an agreement with myself that I'm gonna start doing something to help my body. So I basically wrote down on a sticky note that I was gonna not hit the snooze button anymore, and that I was going to make it work in whatever way I could to fit fitness into my life. And so I just wrote myself a little sticky note saying that, and signed it and stuck it on my bathroom mirror. And every day my alarm clock would go off at 4 a.m. and I would get up and do like three sets of squats, body weight squats, easy stuff, right next to my bed. Three sets of squats, three sets of push-ups, three sets of crunches. And I did that for like a month solid. And then I felt really super strong. And so I started adding other things. And then pretty soon came going to Walmart and buying kettlebells and dumbbells and doing squats with that. And then I kind of ran out of like things to do with that. And so I was like, eh, I started looking on Craigslist and I go and buy myself a bench press. And I got so much crap for that. I emptied out my whole office, and my husband and my brother went to pick up this bench press, and it had like a little leg press thing on it. And they were making fun of me the whole time. They were like, yeah, enjoy the new coat rack, you
Right.
know, and all these things. And I got up and I used that thing every day. Pretty soon, my routine got so big that I was having to break things into splits. So, like upper body, lower body. And I'm sure I drove my husband crazy because I'd be like, feel my leg. There's like a muscle in my leg. And so he was pretty, I'm sure he was probably annoyed by me, because every day I'm like, whoa, look at this. I have a bicep, you know? And that led me back to scrolling around on the internet and seeing that, man, I'm kind of looking like a bodybuilder. And so next thing you know, I had to present it to my husband that I wanted to go on stage in a sparkly bikini and flex my muscles. And I wasn't sure how that was going to go. And I had to marinate on it for a few days to be like, hey, this is something I've always kind of like been interested in. And I never thought it would be a reality for me, but I think it is. And so anyway, that led me down this rabbit hole of finding a coach, getting into bodybuilding, stepping on the stage for the first time. And then after that, I was addicted. And so that's kind of the history there. In the process of that, I had a coach, my very first coach. She encouraged me to get my personal training license. And I didn't really feel like it was something I wanted to do at the time. I was more focused on myself. But then I was like, you know, people are asking me now, what can they do? And I don't want to give them an improper question, you know, answer to their question. So I think I'll just learn it, at least for myself, and then I'll have it, you know. So I go out, get my personal training license. More and more people are asking me questions and things. And before you know it, I'm training some people here and there. Well, that's cool. And I found out that I actually really like training people. Right. So it's been really fun training people, teaching them stuff. And I'm not just going out and training bodybuilders. I'm teaching people that have never trained before. I'm teaching people like functional movements, things that they've never had to do. Like, because some people, I mean, I'm from a farm. I'm pretty strong as it is. I was raised on a farm, bucking bales, working hard. Some people have never had that. And so I started to realize not everybody functions the same, and you have to find ways to cue them and ways to teach them how to function better and ways that are things that are going to help them strength-wise as far as putting it into effect in the everyday life. Because some people have back problems, or they have things, little things that bother them that can be fixed by doing some simple strength and conditioning. So anyway, I got really into that. And since the beginning of our GAPS diet, when it started, I got really into nutrition and started researching like everything under the sun. So I was literally filling my poor brain with so much knowledge with fitness and nutrition that I swear my head hurts sometimes. And at that point I was like, okay, I got people again asking me questions, and I felt like I knew a lot about nutrition because I've been working so hard on it. But I felt like nobody would take me seriously if I didn't have a piece of paper saying that right. I actually knew what I was talking about. So I did end up getting my nutrition license, and I have a piece of paper now in both areas that say I know what I'm talking about. So that's kind of my story. I know it's a long one, but I think all of it is kind of important to who I am now.
Right. And there's so many things that you hit on that are important. You know, especially this idea of starting small with your physical fitness. And we'll touch on that in a little bit, because I think a lot of people, they want to get healthy. And so they look at people like you, bodybuilders and internet personalities, and they say, okay, what are they doing? And that's usually the wrong approach, because they get so overwhelmed when they get started. But I want to get back on the gut health for a little bit, because I'm a certified autism specialist. It's another little piece of paper that I have to let people know I know what I'm talking about. But the connection between gut health and autism is so huge, and we're finding out more and more and more about it. And the leading cause of aggression in children on the spectrum is constipation, as one of the studies that we're figuring out. And constipation is directly related to their diet and what they're consuming. And so how about you, would you mind explaining kind of that gut health behavior connection? You touched on it a little bit with your son, but what are some things that the average American listening to this can kind of look for in their diet and be aware of?
Absolutely. So our gut health affects everything. And I'm so happy to hear about the autism piece with you and gut health, because it's a huge, huge, huge factor with autistic kids is their gut health. And so anyways, our gut, they actually call it our second brain. It is controlling so much in our body that we don't even know. It's not just digesting our food, right? So here's a little tidbit. When you're digesting your food, I'm gonna try to break this down so that it's super simple to understand. A lot of the things in the standard American diet now are very inflammatory to our gut system. And there's these little like pieces, this little lining in our gut that's kind of like a cheesecloth. And it kind of filters everything out from our system, because some of the stuff we eat isn't really good for it. Also some of the proteins and stuff that we eat. So not to say protein is bad, but it's not good when it goes directly into your bloodstream in the incorrect manner. So this little cheesecloth, after time, when our digestion isn't working well, gets little rips and tears in it. And then it starts letting pieces of the cheese get into the systems of our body that don't like it. And they think that that is a foreign invader, and they attack it. And this attack causes a heavy inflammatory response, and it affects all sorts of stuff because your body's in distress. It thinks that it's being attacked by something. So a lot of people are suffering from gut inflammation that causes a whole plethora of other things. And it causes aggression in children and adults, depression, all sorts of stuff. Autoimmune diseases are heavily linked to the gut. And also 60% of our immune system is developed in our gut. So in days like this, where we're all questioning this COVID-19 stuff, we need to be taking care of our gut more than ever. It's very, very, very important.
Awesome. And that's something that, like I said, we're getting more and more and more research about it. It's kind of sad that it's been neglected as far as a field of study in so many different areas, especially when it comes to behavioral health. But we're figuring out that we don't always, the response isn't always medication and pharmaceuticals. I mean, I've seen them do wonders in some kids, but a lot of times it's just making them eat right and giving them more room to exercise and be active. In fact, with all of my kiddos that I see, who suffer from ADHD, physical fitness is a big part of our treatment plan, just getting them moving because their brains aren't designed to sit in a desk for 7 straight hours and they need that ability to get up and move. And so one of the things that, I was going somewhere with that conversation and I lost my track, but so when it talks about, let's talk about that COVID-19 and being healthy and being better prepared for any kind of illness, because before I worked in the public schools, I did stroke rehab for years. And I saw that the patients that came in who are physically fit, and I don't mean bodybuilder, just people who are active, people who went on walks, guys who worked on the farm, what have you, they recovered so much faster, which meant they're not in the hospital so long, which meant their insurance isn't being billed as much, which means, you know, that the healthcare system is better able to address their particular need and get them recovered and get them out versus people who had a very sedentary lifestyle. They come in and take them a much longer time to recover from any kind of injury, whether it's stroke, a hip replacement, et cetera. So what are some ways that the average American can kind of start overall just improving their general health?
I think food is a huge factor in this. You can set all fitness aside, all of this kind of activity aside. Like I said, my journey started with food. My health drastically improved when I changed my diet. I think the number one thing, if I could just say one thing at all that would help people get better, is remove grain from your diet. So grain is quinoa, rice, wheat, all, corn, all of these things, get rid of it. You know, oats, all of that, get rid of it. It's so, so bad for you. And it's proven more and more that most Americans are suffering from some kind of metabolic dysfunction. Most people are in, they're now calling it type 3 diabetes. Most people have become insulin resistant because their body is being hammered with heavy carbohydrate loads every single day. This is sugar, this is grain, and this is causing so many huge issues. So my very first word of advice is blood sugar control. And that might seem like an extreme thing to people that don't understand it, but blood sugar control is reducing the amount of carbohydrates you eat. And a carbohydrate is sugar, fruit. And I'm not saying don't eat fruit. I'm saying don't eat fruit every day. I mean, fruit is healthy, but don't eat like for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, honey, sugars, Pop-Tarts, cereals. Granola is not the breakfast of champions. Neither is Wheaties. you know, things like that. Carbohydrates are causing a majority of the illness that we have out there today. And even with this COVID-19 thing right now, they are proving that it is going after the people that have blood sugar dysregulation. So people with diabetes and insulin resistance, and that eventually leads to also cardiovascular ramifications. So removing carbohydrates from your diet, and I'm not saying you have to be going into a keto state or anything like that, which for, I think for everybody, that's a great thing to do for a short period of time, or if it works great for you longer, because it kind of teaches your body how to regulate differently. But I'm just saying reduce how much you're eating, because if you start looking at how many carbohydrates you're eating, a lot of people are eating a majority of carbohydrates.
And I'm one of those people. And you know, I'm really enjoying this conversation about diet and the nutrition. And I might even ask you to come back for a second episode, maybe talk about the fitness part, because I think I'd really like to focus on that diet part, because like you said, that's the first step you have to take. And I think a lot of reasons that people give up on their fitness journey is they start going to the gym and they don't make a change in their diet. And so they're fighting uphill the entire time they're working out, because all the things that that make them feel sluggish or make them feel kind of down, it's still in there as far as their diet goes. But I want to talk about those diets, you know, your keto, your paleo, your primal blueprint, all these different things, because that seems to be what you lean towards. Is the one in particular that people need to focus on, or is it about kind of figuring out what works for your family and what works for where you are?
Well, I think what works for you is an absolutely huge piece of the puzzle, right? Because what might be sustainable for me may not be sustainable for Billy. And I recently, when I was diagnosed with PCOS, I actually decided to move to a ketogenic diet, which I was not against before, but I wasn't 100% on board with it either. So I started looking into it a lot more and athletes that perform in a ketogenic state. And I learned after having a couple of them on my podcast and bouncing things off of them that it can be done. And I think there's a big misnomer there. So I personally decided I wanted to get my blood sugar under control and I wanted to teach my body to burn fat for fuel instead of carbohydrates all the time and riding this giant glycemic wave. And so I moved into a ketogenic diet for myself. And I discovered when I did that, that my chronic hunger was gone because I had been, after going through so many bodybuilding cuts and getting super lean, my hunger and satiety hormones were a little bit messed up. And so I was hungry all of the time and I literally could eat a house and still be hungry. So that's not great if you want to keep a nice physique. And right. So I noticed that when I changed my diet up and incorporated a lot more fat in, my hormones got a lot better. I was not hungry all the time. And it actually made me so much more satiated that I wasn't hungry and I wasn't wanting to go binge on stuff. And so it's actually worked really well for me because I quit kind of counting calories because I'm not saying to count calories. I'm saying for me, I count calories because I'm a bodybuilder and I'm always watching what I'm putting in and how much protein I'm getting and how many carbs and how many fats. You don't have to be obsessive like that. That's just me. But my hunger signaling got so much better that I stopped actually counting my calories. And every once in a while I would just to see where I was at. And I was always actually on the lower side of things because I wasn't hungry anymore. So it worked really, really well for me. I think for most people though, even though experimenting with a ketogenic diet may be a great place, because here's the thing, when we are born these days, the first things we start getting aside from formula or breast milk, which formula is a high carbohydrate thing too, but we are training our body from the minute we are born until we're an adult to burn sugar. So basically our poor body thinks that we have to have this. And when we run low on it, we have our blood sugar get low and then that makes us hungry again. So we kind of never have to go to that using our own fat for fuel source really. And so I think that for anybody, it's a great thing to experiment with going ketogenic for 6 months, something like that. Just to teach your body how to go to these different places. Because this is one thing I've noticed is that now if I incorporate carbohydrates into my diet, within a couple days, I can go back into ketosis again. And that shows me that I am metabolically flexible now because my body's like, oh, I don't have any carbohydrates to burn. We're not going to drop your blood sugar into the floor. We're actually just going to go burn fat and we'll be fine. So my blood sugar drastically improved when I taught my body how to go to these places and be flexible. So I think that's a great thing for if somebody really wants to dive in and do it, I think that's a great thing. That being said, going to a bunch of processed labeled keto foods is not what an actual ketogenic diet is. An actual ketogenic diet is lots of vegetables and meat and fat. So getting all these processed ketogenic foods is not a great place to start with that. Gotcha. So that being said, that will move us into paleo or primal, anything like that. The biggest thing I want people to understand is eating real food. Very important. If you learn nothing else from this podcast, this is something that you need to place emphasis on. Things that don't have a label are great because it means they're real, right? I mean, broccoli doesn't need a label. It's broccoli, you know, right. A potato doesn't need a label. It's a potato. And so that's a great place to start. Label-free foods, maybe start then looking into reading your label, but being sure that you understand everything that's in that product. There are products out there that have labels. but you know what's in them. You know, if it's freeze-dried strawberries, it says freeze-dried strawberries. Maybe sometimes they'll put some citric acid in there. That's not going to hurt you. But things that you know what they are, if you start incorporating all of these other things in there, erythritol. Okay, that's a fake sugar that doesn't have any calories, and it's popping up in a lot of foods now because calories have become a big part of the discussion in the nutrition world. But do you know what erythritol is? Can you think about it in your head? Like, can you picture erythritol growing wild out in a field somewhere? No, you can't. So if you can picture that thing in its form that it says it is, I think that's a great thing to put in your mouth. And honestly, even if you're eating grains, I guess it's still better than a lot of this other stuff that you're putting in your mouth. So I think starting getting back to eating real things is a great place to start. I definitely am a huge advocate of meat and vegetables and fish. You can make some amazing food out of real food. And your taste buds kind of get, I think our taste buds are so used to eating this hyper palatable food that we kind of almost lose taste for things that are real. And that's become a big problem because then your brain automatically wants that. And it's really been proven to become a problem, like scientifically, a lot of these artificial sweeteners they're putting on the market. They're thousands and thousands of times sweeter than actual sugar. And so what happens is your tongue actually craves that extra sweetness, and things like sugar aren't even sweet enough anymore. So these hyperpalatable foods are a big, big problem. And so I think if you start taking it back to nature and retraining your body, you're going to find that you can get some excellent taste out of real foods. I mean, a big common thing that we do at our house is we buy broccoli and cauliflower and mushrooms and chicken, and we saute that all up in some coconut aminos with some fresh ginger and garlic, and it's all real stuff that we knew what it was, and it tastes amazing. So you can do it and retrain your taste buds to enjoy real food again, and it's going to pay off.
That's awesome. And that's something that you touched on so many things there that I was going to ask, but the big one is this idea of our bodies learn to burn sugar. And you know, for a long time, people avoided fat. If I eat fat, that makes me fat, so I'm not going to eat anything fatty. And I think we've kind of slowly shifted gears and kind of gotten back on that track a little bit. But I think that's the biggest issue is you see these people who they'll take an energy drink or something like that before they go to the gym, and then they'll work out, and then they'll reward themselves with a Little Debbie or something, you know, with dinner. And they're putting the same energy source into their body. And that's why it's not burning any fat, because it's not being trained to burn fat. So could you expand a little bit on this idea of how fat fits into the diet? Because I think a lot of people still have this misconception that fat is bad.
Yeah. So let me try to basically explain the anatomy of how our body works a little bit here. A lot of people are afraid of fat. That's because of the American Heart Association. And I mean, I hate to get conspiracy theorist here, but the American Heart Association is backed by pharmaceutical companies and big food. So that's a number one red flag for me. I've had multiple doctors on my podcast that have even stated that these big food and big pharma companies are writing a lot of the textbooks and things that they are learning from in college, and that they did not get a proper nutritional education when they were actually in school. So now they are learning the real way nutrition works, and their minds are all blown. But anyway, back to the question that you were asking about fat. So here's the thing about carbohydrates. Our body is so used to burning them that, like you said, it doesn't go to fat. And here's the thing. People think that fat is what makes you fat. But let me just explain the anatomy of a carbohydrate, right? So you eat a carbohydrate, and the more lean mass you have, so the more muscle you have, it goes into your bloodstream. And then your body will release insulin to try to clear that after it sends it to all these places. So you've got your blood sugar is a little elevated because say you just ate a rice cake, And so that rice cake is going to be shipped off to your muscle, because your muscle works a lot off of sugar, which is stored in a form called glycogen. Or it's shipped off down to your liver to be stored. And then what's left, if you still have high blood sugar, is it is something that gets turned into something called a triglyceride. And then that triglyceride gets shipped off and stored as fat. So a carbohydrate, yes, is getting stored as fat. And I'm sorry, I got to rewind a little bit right there, because the way that the sugar gets to your muscle is when insulin is released, insulin kind of holds that sugar's hand and takes it into the muscle. So anyhow, gotcha. When we become insulin resistant, our body is trying to basically knock on that cell and have the insulin go into it. But our body is ignoring that because it's so used to having it knocked on all the time because you have high blood sugar that it just starts ignoring it. It's like the boy who cried wolf or whatever. So our body starts ignoring it. So then that blood sugar sitting there because the cell won't take it in or it's full. And next thing you know, you're releasing more insulin, and that's causing these people to be chronically in an elevated insulin state, which also induces fat storage. So there's some anatomy of the carbohydrate. You can get fat off of carbohydrates. So fat, on the other hand, does not cause you to have high blood sugar, and your body can burn it as fuel. So when you start a ketogenic diet, your body exhausts all of its glycogen. So it comes out of the liver, comes out of your muscle. And so basically then it's like, oh no, I have no more sugar. And your blood sugar will drop. And when this happens, your body gets kind of scared because it's like, oh no, I've got to have sugar. And that's where a lot of people experience a keto flu. They get kind of sick and they have blood sugar troubles and they have stomach problems. And I've heard of a whole plethora of things because their body is in a panic. It's like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I have no sugar.
Right.
After a couple days or a week, usually this subsides, and then the body starts looking for other resources to get its energy from. And that's when it starts to learn to burn fat. So when this happens, your body now all of a sudden understands that it can actually burn fat for fuel. And that's where a lot of people see results with the ketogenic diet. So something that I have also learned as an athlete is that there's a lot of other really amazing things that can happen with a ketogenic diet energy-wise, because it actually, when you're fasted and you are, and you have a lot of ketones going on, the energy is a lot cleaner. And I don't feel so sluggish anymore when I'm working out and things like that. And I also notice when I'm fasted and my ketones are higher, I don't build lactic acid like I used to. I contacted one of my friends who's a researcher in the ketogenic realm, and she said some methyl carboxylate transmitter that actually suppresses lactic acid. So if you're an athlete like myself, the day I discovered this happened and it was a really big impact for me, I was on a long bike ride, and at the same place every time I always peter out, even the day before. And this next day I had been fasted longer and I had no food on board. You can go forever when you're in ketosis without eating. It's crazy. You're not hungry. And I noticed that my heart rate was still high and I'm trucking along, but my legs had no lactic acid. They didn't feel heavy. They didn't feel like they were fatigued. And I was like, what the heck is going on? Well, that was because the methyl carboxylate transmitter was suppressing the lactic acid. So there's a lot of benefits actually being shown in endurance athletes that are using a ketogenic diet.
Awesome. And let's talk about fasting for a little bit, because I've seen that trend coming up as well, this intermittent fasting and this idea of, I know a lot of colleagues, teachers I work with have started this trend of doing the fasting. And that's something that I think that we as American society, we don't particularly do. And even me with a strong Christian background, fasting is not a big part of most Christian families, even though it's so crucial to the faith, you know, thousands of years ago. But what are some of the elements of fasting that people can benefit from? What are some things that they can start doing if they wanted to start experimenting with fasting and kind of incorporating that into their daily routine?
So there's mixed research on this. I know I have done quite a bit of research in the realm of fasting. It's really shown to be super beneficial in males. But there's a little mixed research on it with females. They say females shouldn't go over some people. Who are they really? But they say some people, females, shouldn't go over 12 hours because it is hard on their hormones. However, I have discovered that doing like a 16-8 works really, really well for me and a lot of other women. So I don't know what the research is on that, but I know that people are going to struggle. If they are a sugar burner, they're going to struggle to fast. They're going to get hungry because their blood sugar is going to drop drastically. Now, if you wanted to get crazy and you're one of those type A people that really wants to try to get into ketosis fast, that's a great way to start is by not eating for 16 hours. So you say you eat at 5 p.m. and then don't eat until 16 hours later the next day. That's a great way to start to get into ketosis. A great way to kickstart your body learning how to burn fat for fuel, and you're sleeping for a lot of that, right? So it makes it easier. But I think if you're a primary sugar burner, starting to fast is going to be difficult because you're going to be hungry. So I kind of recommend getting into ketosis first before you experiment with intermittent fasting. Now, if you can do it and you aren't playing around with being keto, you could totally go for it. I recommend a 16-8. So I do a 16-8 like 4 or 5 times a week. And then, or, you know, listen to your body. If you get hungry and you're in ketosis, probably you are actually hungry. You're not just having a blood sugar problem. So if, like, for example, before my cycle, I notice I get hungrier, I try to kind of listen to my body when it comes to that. So I will actually make my fasts a little bit shorter.
Gotcha. And that's something that I've experimented with in the past is fasting. And, you know, it's when that blood sugar bottoms out and I don't really know what to do because I haven't done my research and I just kind of did it because I understand fasting. I just don't eat, but there's so much more science behind that. So when someone starts with fasting or they start dieting and they hit that low blood sugar where their body is kind of starving for sugar, what do they just ride it out? Are there some strategies to kind of help combat that?
Unfortunately, if your body's used to burning sugar, I think you've got to ride it out. Usually it will shut off that hunger signal eventually. For some people, black coffee works really great. I don't think that hurts anything. It kind of has an appetite suppressant to it. So I think that could be a place or a thing to try if you get hungry. I wouldn't recommend doing it at 5 p.m. though.
Right. So we're coming up on, about 50 minutes here. So why don't you tell people about where they can find you, your different platforms and anything that you've got going on?
Absolutely. I'd love to. Well, I have my own podcast. I don't know if you've checked it out personally. There's some great episodes on there that you would probably be heavily interested in, possibly your listeners, if you're into the autism area. One of my very first episodes I ever put out was with Amy Yardley, and it talks about her GAPS diet journey with her son who is severely autistic. It's a really good one. I have another one on sugar with Dr. Robert Pistori that's really great. And I have just a ton of great podcasts. So my podcast is The Fit Farming Food Mom, and it is available on every single platform. I'm sure if you just Google it, you'll find me. Yeah. I'm also available at ConnieNightingale.com, where I have a ton of recipes and things on my blog. All sorts of great little articles that are pretty good reads. And I can also be found on Instagram at Connie Bigani.
Connie Bigani. Awesome. All right. Well, we will tie this up. I've got one last question for you, Connie. What does a better America look like for you?
I think a better America looks a lot healthier than it does now. I think a lot of people are really struggling, especially when it comes to the realm of obesity. We're seeing more and more kids and families that are severely overweight, eating hyperpalatable food. And I think if we could shine a new light on that, give kids an education on what they're eating, that it's going to result in a much healthier population.
This has been the Better America podcast. To help this week's guest with their vision for a better America,
Be sure to check out the show notes or visit theotdad.com/betteramerica to find out more about supporting their vision and policies. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review this show wherever your podcast app may allow you. And always be sure to share the show with others. Thank you for listening, and Godspeed.